The Jaguars have the right kind of talent to deal with Gronk. Can the Patriots find enough firepower elsewhere to win it in Jacksonville? Plus, a look at that struggling Cowboys offense. Reasons to get excited about the Giants' new look attack. Why the Steelers might have what it takes to derail the Mahomes hype train. And yes, we're going to open up the mailbag. It's all on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through week one. We have watched the tape. We are ready to talk some of these big time week two matchups, as well as take a couple of your questions. Andy, this is a good time of year right now. I'm glad we're doing this show right now. And we actually feel like we're somewhat informed.
Yeah, it's funny. Once September rolls around, I instantly think, like, what did I do with all my time before these games were being played? Because all I do now is watch. I mean, I try to fit it in wherever you can, watching the film, and the rest of your life still gets in the way.
Before that, you were like interacting with loved ones, and
doing... I know. Oh, I know. And you learn nothing from that. You learn nothing. The film, you really learn a lot. But it's a busy time, and it takes a while to get through the film now, because you got to start learning these personnel packages again and who's out there, and guys like Daron Harmon changed their number, and that, you got to look that up and confirm who's 21, all these little things. But it's the details of the game. It's a fun time of year. I really love getting through the September games on film.
It is. We're going to hit at least probably at least four games here. Might get to a fifth. And then we'll take some of your questions. But let's get it going here. We are previewing. This is going to be the Jaguars and the Patriots. This is obviously the rematch of last year's AFC title game. I want to start on the Patriots offense versus Jaguars defense side of the ball. I mean, we say this every time the Patriots play. How are the Jaguars going to counter Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, and that was such a big topic going into the AFC Championship last year, and I never understood why, because the Jaguars were in the AFC Championship because they had the AFC's best defense, and that defense has a very distinct profile, and they went out and they applied that profile to the Patriots' offense. Now, it wasn't quite enough in that game, but it was the right approach. So what they do, they're a cover three defense, as people know. Their linebackers, Miles Jack and Telvin Smith, those guys, I don't know if it's possible for them to be faster this year, but they certainly looked faster in week one. That might be the only linebacking core that truly can guard wide receivers and tight ends on designer plays, because the Giants went after them a number of times and the throws were not available. And then when they get into man coverage, it's Tashaun Gipson matching to the tight end. He did an excellent job on Evan Ingram last week. I'm sure Gronkowski will pose a challenge. He'll probably beat him a few times. But it's not like there's no answers here. These are the answers, and these are good answers. These are good players that do this stuff really well, and they practice this all the time because they don't do a whole lot of different things.
Well, last year, of course, Gronkowski had the concussion midway through that game, so he was not available in the second half when the Patriots made that big comeback. The Jaguars players would have said this, and Jonathan Jones of the MMQB, he was actually down there. He talked to Jalen Ramsey, and he did a Jalen Ramsey piece that was actually about football, instead of saying, hey, Jalen Ramsey, say crazy stuff for 5 minutes, and then we're going to run a Q&A. He basically, you know, Ramsey said this, everyone on the defense said this, we went too conservative late in that game. That's how we gave up the 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. We should have stayed man. We should have stayed aggressive. Danny Amendola doesn't beat us if we're staying aggressive. There is no Amendola. There's no Julian Edelman in this game. Once you get past Gronkowski, what do the Patriots have to work with? I mean... Does basically running that, you know, the combination of backs out there with all the athleticism the Jaguars have, is that as effective against a defense like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. It probably won't be. James Devlin played almost 50% of the snaps in week one. The Patriots are a much more traditional I formation, old school type of offense than people realize, and that's what they're going to have to do. And one thing they do, and I don't think it's going to be overly successful, because Jacksonville's run defense has been a lot better since Marcell Dareus came in. But one thing the Patriots do well is throw quick play action off of a power running game. They're not a zone play action team. They show pull blockers. linebackers have to chase pull blockers. That's what they're taught to do. That's how you defend those runs. And they build in throws right behind where those linebackers chase from. Brady's great at it. It's Gronkowski down the seams. That'll be a big deal. And that's something you're going to want to do against Telvin Smith and Miles Jack, because you need to find ways to use their speed against them. That's your only chance.
Do you put any stock into that sort of storyline? The had we stayed aggressive, we win that game last January, and we're not we're talking about maybe Jaguars defending world champions.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look closer. If he's talking just that side of the ball, Jacksonville's defense, I think you could certainly argue that the offense needed to stay a little more aggressive, especially at the end of the first half there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's – I felt that the Patriots came back and won that game more than the
yeah.
Jaguars gave it away.
Yeah. Well, let's go to that side of the ball. What were your early impressions of Nathaniel Hackett spent the entire summer really talking to Blake Bortles. Obviously, the Jaguars might have had a chance to make a run at another quarterback, whether it be the draft or maybe in free agency. They stuck with Bortles. They thought he was ready to take a step forward this year. What were your impressions of his week one against the Giants?
I was impressed with him. Now, they didn't ask him to do a whole lot. He's absolutely a game manager, but that's fine when you have a running game, and they have a good running game, I think. Not a great one, but a good one, and then a really great defense. You can take a game manager QB. Bortles, some of the throws he didn't make against the Giants were really smart decisions, throws that he may have made a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They worked the underneath passing game a lot, and the one thing they did that really stood out, Gary, and I think we'll see it in this game, it's going to make Patrick Chung a really important defender. They closed the formation on one side, and so they would put a tight end up there as the final guy, as the last guy, and create an edge like that, and they did a really good job in their run game and passing game attacking those closed edges away from their wide receivers. Chung is the guy that guards the edge when they do that, or at least that's what he did against the Texans last week. They'll move their corners over and have him follow the receivers, and Chung will play there. If they do that, then this game very well could come down to how well Patrick Chung plays, of all things. He's more than a ho-hum safety, but
yeah,
that number three safety is a big deal for New England.
Yeah, and as we tape this, we should note we obviously don't have the definitive decisions on some of these injury guys. Sounds like Leonard Fournette is likely to play, is the latest that we're getting at the time of taping here. He might not practice this week, but they feel confident he will play. We'll see about that. But yeah. Before we move on to the next game, though, just wanted to let everyone know, only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were so many great games. That opening Sunday, from the magic of Aaron Rodgers and Ryan Fitzpatrick to the slugfest between the Panthers and Cowboys, Andrew Luck's return, Patrick Mahomes arrives. Maybe you want to relive it. Maybe you want to see those games for the first time. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay them all from every angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial-free, by the way. There's coaches' film, which shows the all-22 angles the pros and coaches use, and which we always watch on this show. And then there's the condensed games, which let you watch a game in about 45 minutes, which is beautiful if you missed the one the night before. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. That's MMQB10things. Game on. All right, let's go to the Sunday nutter here. That is Giants-Cowboys, and we're going to talk a lot of quarterback right here. Let's start with Dak Prescott. We talked all offseason, Andy, about how essentially how bad his passing game weapons are. The receivers and tight ends are arguably the worst in the league. In that Carolina game, he was up and down. There were a couple of nice plays he made, but there were a couple of really wide open receivers that he just flat out missed on throws. I would say it was an uneven performance. I'd go so far as to say it was a discouragingly uneven performance for Dak.
Well, and first of all, it's inarguably the worst receiving core in the league. I don't think it's a close discussion, to be honest with you. What they need to do because of that, and we've talked about this before, is have a highly schemed passing game. They can't just line up and expect guys to win. And Carolina, you know what you're getting with them. They're a zone-based defense, and Dallas didn't have a lot of zone-beater concepts in their routes Sunday. The more you define the play for Prescott, the better he'll be, because he does not have the Deshaun Watson turn-it-loose gunslinger mentality. He needs to be pushed along a little bit. I think he is decisive when the play demands it, so you got to demand it in your designs, and that's how you overcome a lack of talent at wide receiver anyway. The other concern, Gary, is Travis Frederick's out. Ezekiel Elliott did not look great by his standards last week, and now they're facing a Giants team that does a really good job of condensing their defensive fronts, which I think can make it hard to run that outside zone ground game again. So Dallas can't just go in and rely on the running game setting up everything. I think they need to design some stuff in the passing game.
Well, let's head to the other side of the ball here. Let's talk Eli Manning. That was the first time he did 4 years under Ben McAdoo. McAdoo was first offensive coordinator before he was head coach for the Giants, of course. It's 1 week, but playing under Pat Shurmur last week, what were the differences in this offense?
Well, what really encouraged me is Shurmur did a nice job of creating opportunities for Odell Beckham. He moved Beckham all over the formation, especially in trips, and then they ran route combinations to get him in space along the sideline. They got him matched on a safety at times. And the execution was mostly there, not always, but the overall approach, the concept, I liked how their offense was structured and built around Beckham. Now it's just a matter of whether their O-line will be good enough to let it work. It was not against Jacksonville, but a lot of O-lines aren't good enough against Jacksonville.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say one thing. I mean, Eric Flowers is a punching bag, and for good reason for the most part. He was atrocious, and you know, game started with two penalties on three plays. One of them took away a very big play. He was fine, I thought, or sort of good enough as the game went on. I thought he settled in well enough.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people got on him because he was the guy, and Gakwe went around to get that tip on Eli that turned into the pick six for Miles Jack there. But I mean, he was Flowers said this week. He said he was late getting to Ngakoue because he had I believe it was Telvin Smith over his gap and had to hold on for a second.
Yeah, he had to react to Smith. That's the rule of the pass protection. That's how it's taught. That's what Eli Manning's expecting when he sees Telvin Smith there. Smith, because of his location, he's closer to the QB. He's the MDM, as they call it, the most dangerous man. And in that scenario, Flowers had to block the most dangerous man. When Smith retreated, and by the way, Gary, this is another example of how the speed can help you. Smith has more options to show and bluff a blitz because he's got the speed to go get where he needs to go anyway. When he retreated, Flowers adjusted, but by then it was too late, and Gakwe had gotten around the corner. So really, the concept won. Jacksonville just out-schemed the Giants on that play, and Eric Flowers was the guy that paid the price for it, but it was not his fault.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get a better read on just how much of a problem that offensive line is going to be, maybe against the Cowboys this week, who are good up front, but certainly not world beaters like the Jaguars can be. Let's go Steelers Chiefs here. This is going to be fascinating. We are in the early days of the Patrick Mahomes era. Obviously, the hype train was sort of gaining steam leading up to Week One, and now it's really going here. You know, we talked about it on the Monday morning show. Chargers are fairly straightforward with what they do defensively. Steelers, I feel like can probably be a little more creative with what they show Mahomes.
Oh, absolutely. They're more creative with their safeties. They showed split safeties and single high safeties against the Browns. And then the thing they do that I think will make Mahomes have to play a little slower is their natural front presents five potential rushers. And very often they bring four. And you don't know who the four will be, which means you also don't know who that fifth guy dropping into coverage will be, and so which means you might not know the coverage. So there's some moving pieces to Pittsburgh's defense. And Watt is a big part of that, by the way. And he played very well last week.
Yep.
It's a much harder defense to go up against. I think we're going to see a different looking Mahomes. I'm not saying he can't still compete, but he's not going to come out and sling it to Tyreek Hill for a quick touchdown the way he did against the Chargers, theoretically. I mean, it's they're going to have to play a little differently.
I do want to ask Joe Hayden. There's a good chance he's going to miss this game. Like I said, we'll have a better read Sunday morning. But he had the hamstring injury in Cleveland. He's not practicing this week. If Hayden is out, Steelers are without their number one corner. Does that limit what they would basically how creative they would be and how many I don't know how many disguises they could put into their coverage when you're worried about. We don't have enough cornerbacks to cover Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd have to think about that. I'm trying to remember. Cameron Sutton's a guy who came in, and he didn't play last year as a third-round rookie, but he came in and he did all right in place of Hayden. He actually got better as the game went along and made a pretty big play at the end there. That's a really good question. I'm trying to. I know Keith Butler pretty well. I'm trying to think what he would do. His history says that he will get conservative at times when he doesn't trust everything he's got, and part because when they get not conservative, they're pretty complex. They do matchup zones as well, and one thing that Andy Reid's very good at is blurring your zone assignments, and he's got speed to do that with, so he can blur those assignments downfield. They might be inclined to scale back just a little bit, but the other thing that they might Butler might also say is, if we have to hide our corner, let's go on the aggressive and come after Mahomes and make him react to us rather than let him sit back and look for throwing balls against Cameron Sutton. I don't know. That's a great question.
Well, I guess we just have to wait till Sunday to see how that one plays out. Other side of the ball, I mean, look, the last two games between the Chiefs and the Steelers have been they've been Le'Veon Bell games. They've been dominated by the Steelers' ground game, and these were this is the 19-13 win last October, which was the Chiefs were 5-0 going into that game, and that was a mild surprise to people, I guess. And then the playoffs the previous January was the 18-16 game where the Steelers win without scoring a touchdown. Now, of course, before that, they had hammered the Chiefs on a Sunday night. That was the 2016 regular season. They put up 43 points, a lot of them early in a rainy game there. I remember they went after Marcus Peters early, actually, with Martavis Bryant on a couple of deep balls. But no Le'Veon Bell, obviously. James Conner, as far as a ground game goes, brings kind of the same thing. It's probably going to be no Eric Berry again for the Chiefs. Can the Steelers kind of go with the same approach where put three receivers on the field, we're going to hand it to James Conner, and we're basically going to do the same thing we always do against the Chiefs?
Yeah, that would be very different than what they did last week with James Conner, where it was basically peewee football. It was two tight ends, two running backs, and they just handed it off all game long. I mean, it was extremely unimaginative, and I'm sure it was partly because of the weather and they're playing to their defense, and they had a lead a lot of the game. They obviously didn't protect it very well. When they beat Kansas City, like you talked about, running out of those three receiver sets, the Chiefs, when they're in a 4-2 sub-package front, are very vulnerable in run defense there. But when they go to their 5-1, which they did late in that playoff game, I think it was the 18-16 one a couple years ago, I thought if that game had gone five quarters, the Chiefs would have won because they adjusted their defense and went to that 5-1 late in the game, and that running game, which had been killing them, dried up. Why it dries up is because the Steelers do so many double-team concepts. When you're in a 5-1 front, you can't double-team because there's five offensive linemen versus five defensive linemen. Everyone has to go one-on-one initially. So I would imagine the Chiefs need to do that, but I've seen them since play the Steelers last year, and they didn't go back to that 5-1 very often. So I don't quite know what to expect from them because to me it was very clear what to do, and yet they didn't do it a year ago, and maybe that gets into some of their coverages and what they feel they can do coverage-wise. That's going to be a close, interesting thing to watch, and I would imagine the Steelers are going to try to find out early how it's going to go. They should run the ball out of three receiver sets.
Yeah, and look, I've mentioned on the show plenty, Roethlisberger has always played much better at home than on the road over the last couple of years. They won't have weather issues. Forecast is 79 degrees and mostly sunny, so Steelers certainly have the option to throw the ball around if that's what they end up wanting to do on Sunday. So Chiefs are going to have their hands full. Really, both defenses are going to have their hands full in this one. And I know you don't like this aspect of it, Andy, but I will just say Patrick Mahomes has made two starts, both on the road. Meaningless game in Denver last year at what was a 4-11 Broncos team, and then it was a game away from home last week, but more Chiefs fans than Chargers fans out at StubHub Stadium. So it'll be a little bit of a different environment for Mahomes in Heinz Field on a Sunday here.
Yeah, you're right. I don't love that. I don't love that. No, that's fine. It's a good point. I'm kidding you. Yeah, it will be a different environment.
When he just curls up in a fetal position and weeps through the first quarter, you'll understand what I'm saying, Andy. Let's go to Packers Vikings. Look, disclaimer on this one: we are going to talk about this game as if Aaron Rodgers is going to play. That is unclear at the moment we're taping, but we're going to do it anyway. And obviously, things are much different if DeShone Kizer is the Packers quarterback on Sunday. But Rodgers, let's talk about Rodgers and the style of play they employed when he came back from the knee injury, which they presumably would have to do again this week with Rodgers under center. It would be a less mobile, a hampered Aaron Rodgers, playing a much more structured offense. Would that be a disadvantage against a Vikings defense that, I mean, they have a bunch of guys who in coverage, I mean, they're good all the way around, but they're especially good early in the down.
They are good early in the down. I think you need to play crisp and tight and disciplined against Minnesota. I mean, it's just the play Rodgers got hurt on last year, Anthony Barr, he was extending the play. And if Rodgers is hampered, obviously you do that. It raises, should we discuss though the philosophical question, Gary? Because Rodgers is going to be a less than 100%. Yeah. And we don't know the nature of the knee. So this is totally hypothetical and philosophical. We're not getting into details here. But if you've got a QB as valuable as that, and he's on a wobbly leg, do you, A, put him out there before he's fully healed? I guess it's part A. And part B, there some have suggested, well, maybe we shouldn't play against a violent defense like the Vikings. What's your reaction to that?
I don't necessarily say sit him because of the Vikings. Every team's violent. Someone's going to hit him at some point, and he's going to risk injury. I don't think the Vikings are really that much more. Yes, very good pass rush, but I don't think it's that much more of an elevated risk. I mean, like you said, we'd have to know what the injury is, and the medical staff there will have to tell Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers if it's a situation where they say, okay, you can play this week, you'll be, you know, at whatever, we'll throw out the percentages even though they're kind of meaningless, you'll be 60% of yourself. If you sit and rest it for a week, you can get back to 80 or 90% by week three, and then, you know, maybe by midseason you're healthy again, whereas if you're running out there every week, it's going to slow any sort of recovery. I'd sit him in this game because it's a game you might not win with a healthy Aaron Rodgers anyway on the road in Minnesota.
You could argue it's a game you need to win, though. I mean, these teams are slated to go neck and neck in this division, and a lot of people, I think ourselves included, have them go deep into the playoffs. So, and if you finish first against, you know, whoever finishes on top is playing at home in the playoffs. Whoever doesn't is probably playing three straight road games. So this is a huge, huge game because it has so many implications. It just doesn't feel that way because it's week two, but the head-to-head is what decides tiebreakers first and foremost. So, I mean, this game, it's basically a game and a half for how the NFC North will probably shake out.
I think if you're looking at it that way, you're going to say, well, you know, if we have healthy Aaron Rodgers later in the season and Lambeau, we'll get that game anyway. And if we don't get that game, we're not going to beat them regardless.
Yeah.
No
bye till mid-October either for Green Bay, it appears.
Yep. One more question here. This is actually we are going to get to the mailbag, but we're going to sneak in a Twitter question from a Stafford Defender, and that is not my secret Twitter handle there, by the way. He asks about the Sunday night game. Why were the Bears playing so soft in the second half, in your opinion? They played right into the hands of a QB who had to get the ball out quick. Were they uncomfortable pressing with the lack of speed they have at cornerback? I don't see Minnesota making the same mistake next week. But let's talk about what the Bears did defensively in the second half of that game. Obviously, we talked a ton about Rodgers on Monday morning. Did the Bears sit back too much in the second half? And on top of that, between the tempo and maybe just the fact that the offensive line played better in the second half for Green Bay, basically did neutralizing that pass rush to an extent sort of expose the Bears' secondary anyway?
I don't know if I'd quite go that far. Green Bay did have a different approach. Chicago, we've talked how they're a blurry zone defense. That's their profile. So it's hard to fault a team for sticking to their profile, even if the profile happened to not work in that moment. I mean, I didn't have an issue with the Bears play. It didn't strike me as anything bad. Now, you might talk to Vic Fangio, and he might have seven or eight things. Yeah, we did this little thing wrong, could have done that differently. But I like Chicago's defensive approach overall, and the better they are at their linebackers, the harder they're going to be to play against. They did play Roquan Smith down the stretch in that game. He replaced Kwiatkowski, who started the game. Mm-hmm. Not saying Roquan Smith gave up the game or anything like that, but as long as they're stable at linebacker, I think it's going to be a very good defense. But they're not quite stable yet because they're still rotating some guys in there next to Trevathan.
Yeah. I mean, there is something to be said for they had a 20-point lead. You do kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit, so you don't give up big plays, but they gave a big play anyway. I don't know.
Well, that was out of two-man. The biggest one, the Randall Cobb play, that was out of two-man coverage, which is the coverage you call to not give up big plays, assuming that the quarterback can't run. You are vulnerable to scrambles out of two-man. So the call was fine. They just got out executed on that. Rodgers was marvelous.
Do you think, I mean, as far as the pass rush goes, because the pass rush did not bother Rodgers a whole lot, even on plays where he was patient, I don't think he took a whole lot of contact in the second half. Do you think that was the tempo? I know we had Kaylin Kaler there from our staff. She talked to Brian Bulaga, and Bulaga told her about some of the adjustments he made for the second half as far as working against Khalil Mack. But, was it just a matter of better offensive line play, or is there something to be said for the tempo slowing down that pass rush, or both?
I think the tempo helped because in that case – The linemen probably knew the tempo was picking up because they knew that Rodgers was limited. And when they know the tempo's picking up, they can block differently. Remember what J.C. Treader told me at training camp this year where he just blocks for Rodgers when he was in Green Bay. He's now the Browns center, but when he was a Packer, he would just block as if the play is going to last forever. So he didn't quick set a guy. He didn't go after his blocks, which is what you do in a quicker passing game. He was very reactionary in it. Well, if you know you're not blocking forever now, then maybe you do block a little bit differently. The other thing to remember, it's week one, and pass rushers get tired, too. The Bears were not the only team whose pass rush kind of quieted down the stretch. I saw that on film from some other teams. You can't go in assuming that, and Minnesota's got a great pass rush, so I'm sure this is a big concern to Green Bay. But we know the Packers are going to go one-on-one blocking. That's what they do, and they're going to get all five guys out in the route, and their answer to protecting the QB is giving him options to throw to rather than putting more blockers around him.
All right. One last thing before we get to the mailbag here. Josh Allen will make his first start for the Buffalo Bills when they face the Chargers in Buffalo. On Sunday, no Joey Bosa for the Chargers in that one, it looks like. But let's set aside, would we start him? Would we not start him? We talked about that a little bit this summer. My question to you, Andy, is look, that offensive line is really not NFL caliber. Their receivers are no good. What can they do to give Josh Allen a chance here? Or is this just a matter of saying, okay, Josh Allen is a physical marvel, we're just going to trust he can do some sort of out of structure stuff to make, two or three plays over the course of 60 minutes.
Well, I mean, that can't be your plan, though. You can't have the plan being, hey, pull a rabbit out of the hat here.
I don't know what else you're going to do with that offense.
No, I don't either. That Baltimore film, if that had been an amateur game, they would have called that game in the third quarter. The Ravens' D-line was killing the Bills' offensive line. And, you know, Deion Dawkins is not a bad – he's a second-round pick a year ago. Jordan Mills has been okay at tackle. It's those guys inside that you wonder about. Vlad Dukas, Ryan Groy, John Miller, who to a lesser extent, but he was not very good last week. I don't know what you do. I don't know how you play if your three interior linemen absolutely cannot block, which was what happened a week ago. We'll find out how they do. The Chargers are not quite as formidable along their D-line as the Ravens, but they can be half as formidable and still have the upper hand against the Bills.
Yeah. All right, let's open up the mailbag here. First one's coming from – oh, and I should mention, if you want to send mailbag questions, we will do a mini mailbag every Thursday. You can send it to talkback@themmqb.com, or you can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGrambling_SI, or you can send questions to Facebook. We're both there, too. This week's mailbag, first one's coming from John Parker Ford. What has to go wrong for a defense with the talent level the Saints have to do what they did against the Bucs this weekend? So I'll open this up for you first, Andy. What was wrong with the Saints? How did the Saints give up 48 points to Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Well, I mean, I've still got to get through all of that film, but you're going to have coverage breakdowns anytime that happens. Remember, the Saints were like this last year, too, though, early in the season. They gave up a lot. Remember, New England killed them in week two, a mm-hmm. bunch of downfield throws. So I wouldn't hit the panic button yet. The Saints have man-to-man corners, which means they've got options schematically. And so they can afford some growing pains to find their identity defensively. They did that gradually and very nicely last year. Now, obviously, you'd like them to have it out of the gates, and it's mostly mm-hmm. the same unit as a year ago. But I guess what I'm getting at, let's not panic. And they're facing a really limited Browns offense, to be honest. I mean, it's a limited quarterback is what it is. So they've got a perfect opportunity to bounce back.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, people kind of forget last year, 29 points in that Monday nighter at Minnesota to open things up. And then they gave up, like you said, the 36 against the Patriots at home the next week. Granted, those were not Ryan Fitzpatrick offenses. But, you know, like we said, Ryan Fitzpatrick runs hot and cold, and he was running very hot on Sunday. And look, when the Saints went to Buffalo and destroyed the Bills last year, the Saints players did not have very kind things to say about Tyrod Taylor and the threat he posed to them. So if they're going to get back on track, and I don't know if Tyrod has stuff up on his bulletin board and all of a sudden he's going to start trusting some of these throws or something like that, but they liked playing against Tyrod last year.
He can get as motivated as he wants. The bottom line is he's not an anticipation passer, so he's not running the scheme properly. The Browns do look like a different offense this year. What we suspected has come to fruition. The addition of Landry has expanded their formationing. My guess, he didn't play great against the Steelers, but I bet they're a little more comfortable with Njoku at tight end now. Mm-hmm. So they're doing some stuff schematically, but a quarterback has to anticipate that. That's how those plays work on time, and Taylor does not do that. It's not that he did not do that. He does not do that. It's not his style of play. That's why the Bills offense was so rudimentary when he was their quarterback. So the Saints are not going to get killed in this game because there's not a QB that has that mentality to do it. Ryan Fitzpatrick runs hot and cold. He ran hot. Tyrod Taylor runs lukewarm and cold. I mean, he's not going to attack you downfield the same way. Well, he's never done that.
This next one coming from Nick. Let's see. You talk about receivers moving to the slot to get away from press coverage. Excuse me. Why don't outside receivers who struggle with press coverage, such as perhaps Allen Robinson and Amari Cooper, his words, not mine, not play outside but play off the line with the slot receiver or tight end lining up on the line? So basically change the alignment so your guy who struggles with the press coverage moves back off the line, put your slot receiver covering up the line or your tight end covering up the line and go with it that way.
because that would compromise the timing of a lot of pass plays, because the widest aligned receiver, he's further from the QB, which means he's got to get up on the line to get down into his route quicker because he has more field to traverse in his route. A slot receiver is much closer to a QB, and a lot of times what you want is that guy actually finding – you want to find a way to slow him down a little bit. Otherwise, he's going to get into the middle of the field or wherever he's going. He's going to get there too quickly. So it's just the geometry of football. It's a good question. I understand the idea, and it's something I did think about. But it has to do with the location. It would be really hard for a guy to line up a yard off the ball out wide. He's just too far from the action horizontally and vertically at that point.
Next one's coming from Jordan, and this is one that's close to my heart right now after all my Lions dark horse predictions all summer.
I forgot about that. You were pumping the Lions, really. Oh, I was too, God. But then I saw the MMQB predictions, and you had them in the NFC Championship game.
I did, and I went on a Locked On Lions podcast. Matt Derry out there, and he was kind of like, why do you think the Lions are going to beat the Eagles in January? And I was like, I don't know if they're going to beat the Eagles in January.
I wanted to
put them in case they if they get to January. They've obviously had a good year, and I like the thought of Matthew Stafford with a full offense in January. But that transitions nicely to Jordan's question. Jordan writes, I'm a Lions fan with obvious frustrations over their running game. I realize it's only been one game and it was a blowout, but there was nothing in week one to get me excited after all Bob Quinn invested in the offseason, first and second round picks in Ragnow and Kerryon Johnson. This leads me to a more philosophical question. What's more important for a team's running game, talent or scheme? NFL teams seem to think it's more schemes since they don't pay running backs. The Lions seem to have talented run game personnel. I will add to Jordan's point, it's not just Frank Ragnow and Kerryon Johnson. They signed Ricky Wagner and TJ Lang. They drafted Taylor Decker. That was Bob Quinn's first draft pick ever. I mean, he is a big he's a left tackle, but he is a big physical guy in the run game. They have invested in Bob Quinn's 3 years immensely in the run game, and they had a lead on Monday night. Way back, you know, a million years ago when Sam Darnold had thrown a pick six and that's all we knew of him at that point, they didn't get anything going on the ground. And they had issues with, the Jets players said after the game, they knew every one of Matthew Stafford's hand signals. They saw every adjustment of the line. They were calling out plays. That's obviously problematic. But I guess is this scheme rotten a little bit with what they're doing in Detroit?
I have heard other people say that Stafford does have some pre-snap tendencies that you can identify. I'd heard that a couple years ago. So that has to get cleaned up. They have invested in the running game. I think the O-line is really the most important part of a running game. Like, I look at Philadelphia, for example. Yeah, they have the league's most expansive running scheme. We saw that in week one against Atlanta. I'm sure we will see it when they face at Tampa Bay this week. They can be expansive because they have a mobile center. They have pretty good guards, and they have outstanding tackles. Dallas has a good running game. Washington, I guess, does not have a good running. They have a good line, though. I don't know why I brought up Washington. Detroit's O-line is good enough to make this a dominant run game talent-wise. If we don't see that on the field, if it doesn't produce that way, then you got to make a coaching staff change, either an O-line coach or coordinator or something. I'm not saying they should do that at all. I like Jim Bob Cooter, too, as coordinator, and he's helped Stafford a lot. But this guy, Jordan, here asked philosophically, well, it's simple. It's the Seattle Seahawks conversation. Either they weren't coaching their linemen well or they weren't picking them well, but they've got all these high draft picks or big free agents, and it's not going well, so something has to change.
That's the thing. It's the free agents too. I mean, they brought in two guys who were really good players elsewhere.
And it's not like those guys have been bad. That just the whole running game collectively has not been very good. No, we'll see. It's one game. The Jets are a tough team to run against. The Niners, you know a little bit more what you're going to get with their defensive fronts in the running game. So we'll hold out on Detroit, but I certainly understand why Lion fans have their eyebrows raised right now, because it's not just that they lost, it's the way they lost.
Yeah, they not that I was happy that Sam Darnold threw a pick six to start his career, but I was especially intrigued by that, because then I was like, oh, Lions are going to play with a lead early. Let's see this running game. And then it was LeGarrette Blount getting caught behind the line a couple times. They I don't know why they don't just play Kerryon Johnson like 70% of their reps in the backfield, but that's just me. I don't know. I'm a little worried. I'm worried about my bandwagon choice.
Blount has always been a conundrum for me, because he looks so terrible out there. His physical skills are not what you think of as an NFL runner, and yet it wasn't the case Monday night. But he's very effective. I mean, he scores touchdowns in the red zone. He has a good yards per carry. He's played in successful offenses. When he was with the Bucks, I wrote this about him. Bucks fans got really sensitive, and I got some harsh hate mail from them. And I was actually quite impressed, because one guy in the hate mail, I normally don't see, I can kind of sense it and just click through it.
Yep.
I don't read the hate mail. I really don't. So I was just going through and quickly deleting emails. But this one guy in the subject line said, nice article in the Bucks. That was the subject. Nice article in the Bucks. I clicked it. And then the body of the email said, not really, you pile of garbage, or, you know, whatever else he said. And I thought that was really well played. I've always remembered that. That's the best hate mail I've ever gotten.
I can't. That's going to be like every subject line of every Andy Benoit hate mail we get at Talkback now.
Is nice article.
I send so much of it. Now I know how to get you to open it.
You're the hate mail guy. Well, now it's all on Twitter anyway. That's where you're supposed to hate
people. I was going to say, yes.
It's old-fashioned to hate them on email.
Yeah, and you don't
That's almost as old-fashioned as having the guts to talk to someone face-to-face about this when you're not happy with them.
Twitter also has no element of surprise. It's just the tweets right there, and they're all so short. Whatever. You just glance at them, and you get the whole thing here. Speaking of which, we have one more note here that we have to get to. This is from Cody Hefner on Twitter. It's Fedulum. Fedulum.
Yeah, I saw that. Fedulum. He's a number three safety last year for the Bengals. He was a 7th round rookie, and so I didn't see him on TV a lot, but I saw all of his snaps on film. And obviously film, it's silent. They're not announcing that. He's got should he be allowed to go Fedulum? Because he's wasting some vowels in that pronunciation. He is F-E-J-E. D-E-L-E-M or something like that, I think it is.
Yep.
So he's kind of just mushing it all together, which is wasteful of the E's. Who am I to talk? I go by Benoit, and it's Benoit.
I was going to say, you're very sensitive to silent letters. You choose to pronounce your name phonetically.
Well,
by the way,
moronically. I mean, phonetically, moronically.
Literally every radio show I go to, when they mention you, everyone always says Benoit.
Do they correct them?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have. It depends what part of where the show is. Like, if it's a Louisiana show, I'm fine with it. Although I'm on New Orleans radio every Friday morning now, and they called me Benoit, and I had kind of been looking forward to going by Benoit for the French Quarter people. But that's right. I guess I just never understand why we let everybody pronounce their own name however they want, when we have an English language and rules and guidelines that can adjust this stuff. Someone says, oh, no, I like it this way. Well, it's kind of your personal right, but not really, because that implies that you own a piece of the language, and you really don't own the language. You just have a name.
Yeah, I will say, Clayton has some random silent letters mid-name, and it's not like two consonants jammed together. It should be, well, you pronounce it how he pronounces it. He made a great play. We butchered his name, and then we laughed about it, which is very rude on our part. But he made a great play at the end of that game to clinch that that Bengals-Colts game there. Cody also says that I owe him an RC Cola, but Cody, as you should know, RC Cola outgrew me. They're not my unofficial, unpaying sponsor anymore. That would be Shasta. So I'll get you a Shasta soda. But that's
quarter. Those used to cost a quarter. I never understood how RC Cola did it. Everybody else was 50 cents, and they were a quarter a lot of the time.
Well, Shasta's going to nickel, so they're not. I don't know what Chess is doing, if we're being perfectly honest. I wrote a bunch of taglines for them, which I'm wondering if some point someone will notice in my column from their company that I'm, I don't know if I'm defacing them in some way or just giving them free commercials, but.
I'd say free commercials because this is the first I've thought of Shasta in years.
There you go. You know what my latest tagline is?
What is it?
Straight from our mountain streams to your urine stream. That's the end of the show, so I can talk about urine. That's part of that's in the contract I signed with SI and Cadence here. But that's a let's wrap it. Let's end this nonsense. We'll be back in your feed Monday morning. Obviously, in the meantime, you had Albert Breer yesterday, our Monday show. You can listen to that. Gambling show will be coming out Friday. Thanks to today's sponsor, that is NFL Game Pass. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show, so please support them the way they support us. Thank you to producer Shelby Royston, as always, the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor on research. Those guys are awesome and make us sound as smart as we can possibly sound. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Send those questions in for the mini mailbag. Like I said, talkback@themmqb.com. We're both on Twitter. We're both on Facebook. Remember to listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast for all these shows wherever you get your podcasts, including themmqb.com, si.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. Andy and I will see you guys Monday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.